T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
9:47. We don't go back. 9:44, 16 before 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL. The thing that has been headlining the news is that Boeing 737 MAX 8. I read an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, and I haven't been able to find that article again. And I don't know if I'm quite sure what I read is accurate, or maybe I misunderstood it. We're talking to Sean Prochnicki right now with the Center for Aviation Studies at The Ohio State University. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Tommy.
Thanks for taking the time with us. I really do appreciate it. Before we get to the nuts and bolts of what exactly is going on with this, I guess it's more like circuits and programming with the Boeing 737 MAX 8, the Wall Street Journal seemed to indicate that and I don't have the article open in front of me to reference it, but that Boeing was aware of these problems, that they were negotiating, and I'm not quite sure what that means, with the FAA as to what the fix would be, and that the government shutdown may have affected this. So walk us through that process, if you will, because I don't know where there would be a need for negotiation.
Well, so whenever an aircraft manufacturer brings a new model to service or is trying to fix a problem with an old one, that has to be approved by the FAA. But there aren't necessarily clear rules on exactly how the fix should take place. The manufacturer, there's a lot of leeway in how the manufacturer can meet a certain requirement. What happens is, what they mean by negotiating is, FAA experts get involved and they become part of the process as well as trying to understand what is being fixed. So they go back and forth trying to meet the intent of the regulations with regard to certification of the aircraft. And then they agree on a settlement as far as, I shouldn't, settlement's not the best word, but they settle
compromise.
Maybe a compromise. That almost has a negative connotation
right to
it. But basically, right? So they say, they have to prove to the FAA experts that they have met the requirement of either the initial certification or a fix, like we're seeing with the MAX 8.
So what the history of this in terms of pilots first noticing there was an issue with this aircraft, or at least the mechanisms that the automatic mechanisms that kicked in. I don't even know how to say it, doctor. But what is the history of this in terms of pilots first noticing a problem and reporting it?
So there have been some media reports that pilots have reported pitch problems with the MAX 8 over the last, I think it's been the last year, maybe not quite that long. And they've been doing this through what's called the NASA ASRS system, which is a system that all of us as pilots, controllers, flight attendants can submit safety concerns to this national database that everyone has access to, in fact. The concern is, or the question that we need to ask is, why that information did not get to the appropriate authorities to understand this problem long before accidents started happening. The real question is trying to understand that information. Was that given to the individual airlines? There are different reporting systems that airlines have where they can report information directly to their airline, and then the airlines can take that and go directly to the manufacturer to report these concerns. What we don't know, Tommy, is, did those individuals report it to the airlines as well, or did they just go to this national database and put it in there? We just don't know this yet.
The fact that we don't have a full—I hate to say full time—but the FAA administrator, and instead we have an acting FAA administrator. Did that play any part in any of this?
No, an acting administrator has all the authority that a otherwise in place administrator has, and I really don't see that having someone acting really played a role at all.
Before we get to the technical aspects, I got one more question, Doc, and maybe you can explain this to me like I'm an eighth grader because I'm not getting it. Boeing knows that the last thing in the world they want, from a moral standpoint, from a business standpoint, from a Wall Street standpoint, is to have a problem with these aircraft. So I guess what I'm not getting is it relates to the FAA. If I'm the CEO of Boeing, I'm doing every bit of research I can to find out what is wrong, and then I'm exceeding what the FAA may require of me to make sure that the planes stay in the air. Am I missing something?
No, that's exactly right. You're right. Boeing has a huge financial interest, as all the airlines do, and problems like this with airplanes could be financially devastating to companies even as large as Boeing. The concern is, what Boeing really knew after the Lion Air accident, and, you know, where this pitch system is believed to be involved. That report isn't out yet, so preliminary information has come out, and Boeing has that information, and they are working on a fix, and then Ethiopian happened. And we don't know yet if that flight was the same as the Lion Air, but it sure does look similar.
Doctor, do you have a couple more minutes so we can get to what exactly they think is wrong, and also the president's comments about aircraft being too complicated to fly, because a lot of people scoffed at that. And then I saw a story today, it might have been the New York Times, I forgot the phrase they used, but drowning in technology, perhaps, was that it? Where they might be a little too complicated. Sean Pruchnicki is our guest with the Center for Aviation Studies at The Ohio State University, talking about the problems with Boeing 737 MAX 8, and we will pick it up here when we come back on WWL. All right, 9:52, back with Sean Pruchnicki from The Ohio State University Center for Aviation Studies. So, Doctor, you know, I tell you about that article I read where, you know, the president, well, first off, tweeted about how complicated the planes are. And then I saw an article today that said, well, wait a minute now, hang on a second. He might have a point because, and I believe the phrase they used was drowning in technology, where let's go to the technical aspects of what happened with the Boeing aircraft, the 737 MAX 8. What do they think the problem is, and what is it that they're going to do to fix it, and how could this have kind of made its way through the production design and production process?
So the problem or the technical aspect of this is a what's called a pitch augmentation system. So when the nose of the aircraft becomes too high, in other words, close to aerodynamically stalling, the system kicks in and will push the nose of the airplane down. So it's originally designed as a safety feature to be able to prevent the aircraft from stalling. Unfortunately, this automation system, and I do agree to some extent with the White House that our airplanes are extremely complex, and our pilots are not always trained on every single facet of that complexity. The problem is that this system, this pitch augmentation system, uses data from various sensors on the airplane to be able to notice this concern and be able to effectively respond to it. The problem, Tommy, is it was getting bad data. It was getting bad information, and the machine, the automation part of it, thought that the nose was too high when in fact it was not. So it did very dutifully. It followed its programming and pushed the nose of the airplane down, to which the pilots responded by trying to pull the nose of the airplane back up. And then we saw with the Lion Air accident, this battle, this fight with automation for control of the airplane continued all the way to the water. Here's the problem.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, here's the problem. Our automation is not transparent enough. We've talked about this problem for years, and there are many experts in my field and other fields that are quite aware of this, that we don't have enough feedback from our automation. We don't always have the ability to turn it off, and we don't always have the ability to understand what it's going to do, when it's going to do it. So the pilots, in some cases, with some types of automation, are almost at the mercy of the automation and not always able to predict when it's going to operate some type of function.
I believe, too, I read, saw, or made up, doctor. No, that the input was from one sensor in this situation, and now they're going to change it to get the data from numerous sensors. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly the design of the MAX 8. My guess would be that it is probably a couple different sensors. I'm not sure they were able to get through certification just relying on a single sensor. But clearly what was misunderstood was, even if it was only two sensors, if one of them goes bad, the system will react to that. That's probably the unknown that Boeing faced. And that simply fell through the cracks because, like I said, the machines are so complex, it's really hard to predict every eventuality that could happen with such a complex design.
So does the technology ever come back? Because the pilots and so forth realize, aeronautical engineers, that they've gone too far? Or is it what it is and it's going to continue to get more complicated?
Now, I think it's going to continue to get more complicated, and the challenge for the industry is going to be is to provide more training. We don't train like we used to, Tommy. We used to, 20 years, we did what in ground school, what was called building the airplane. In other words, we learned every single little facet of it to excruciating detail. We don't do that anymore, and it's becoming less and less with training over the last 10 years or so. They train in a lot of cases almost superficially with some areas, much more detail in other areas. And a lot of this is a financial concern that ground schools are expensive. It's very expensive to pull pilots offline and stick them in a classroom for a week or so. So training has become shorter and shorter. The systems have become more and more advanced. We don't have good feedback from these automated systems, and pilots sometimes are left in this lurch where they're surprised at what the automation is doing, and most importantly, they don't know how to turn it off. They were never taught how to disable the system. You know, I'm not sure if this pitch augmentation system has a button that could turn it off. There's some forms of automation that you cannot turn off. I'm not sure about this particular system. What is clear from the Lion Air accident was the pilot didn't know how to disconnect it, if that was even possible.
Is the primary goal, and this may sound sarcastic and I don't mean it to, but is the primary goal still to keep the plane in the air and keep everybody safe? Because it seems as though maybe it's not.
No, I would say that it is. I mean, everyone's doing this with the best intentions. It's just how these systems are designed sometimes, and the complexity of these scenarios is you just can't always foresee every eventuality. That speaks to the complexity. That speaks to what we call emergence, where you have various factors that all line up perfectly, kind of a perfect storm scenario, if you will, to cause these types of events. I mean, Tommy, these are types of accidents we're happening nowadays, you know, globally. We're having automation flight control, loss of control type accidents. And as long as we continue to design automation with low feedback and low transparency, I'm afraid these types of accidents, as infrequent as they are, will continue to happen.
Doctor, I appreciate your time. I really do. And I hope we can count on you whenever we have a question of this nature, anything to talk about.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.